answer so many questions about the media, democracy, and corporate power in our age of war and globalization. Next week, you will hear what role the industry and Chamber of Commerce played in starting the era of McCarthy and the Un-American Activities Committee. A collection of essays by Alex Carey with a foreword by Noam Chomsky has since been published posthumously under the title Taking the Risk Out of Democracy. I hope you have a pen handy for more information. Find out about Alex Carey and details about this program on TUC Radio's website, www.tucradio.org. You can hear this program again on TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. Look under Newest Programs. You can get information on how to order an audio CD by calling 1-707-463-2654. And I will repeat that number in a moment. TUC Radio is free to all radio stations and depends on the support of listeners like you. Your donation or CD order keeps this program on the air. Call anytime at 707-463-2654 for information on how to order. You can get your CD by mail or credit card by phone or online on TUC Radio's secure website, tucradio.org. My name is Mariah Gelarden. Thank you for listening. Give us a call.
Got questions about your computer?
Mm-hmm.
Want to know about the latest electronics?
Yeah.
Are you confused by high-definition TV?
A little.
Well, tune into WBAI every Wednesday at 8 p.m. for the Personal Computer Show.
Yeah?
Yeah, that's every Wednesday on WBAI 99.5 FM.
Oh.
So why don't you tell a friend?
Well, okay.
And tell your boss.
Well.
Hey, call your mom and tell them about the Personal Computer Show every Wednesday at 8 p.m. on WBAI 99.5 FM.
Oh. Okay.
I got questions about my computer.
Have you got questions about your computer?
Not my coffee over in my keyboard. Do you think that's a problem?
No, not for me.
Well, it doesn't mean we're working right, Jimmy.
I'd buy a new one, you know what I mean.
Okay.
But you really have got to be there. It's like the best. It's the Personal Computer Show.
All right, that's enough of that. It's WBAI New York, 7 o'clock, time once again for another exciting edition of Off the Hook.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving, now I can't make a call. We couldn't get much worse. Bum-diddly-bo!
And the very giving cover of the program is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Wednesday evening. Joined tonight by Mike.
Hello.
Alex.
Good evening.
Kyle, we need to find a microphone for you.
Hi.
Bernie S.
Welcome back.
Thank you. Where are you?
I'm in Pennsylvania, somewhere in the rural areas.
Okay. Yeah, Kyle and I have returned from traveling throughout Europe and various interesting places like that. Well, actually, all interesting places within that continent after attending the Ulm conference, as a few of us did. Haven't really talked about it all that much, but there's been so much else to talk about. So many things happening. A new war is coming. Who would have guessed? Just in time for the new TV season, we have a new war on the horizon. And with new wars come web hacks. And the New York Times website.
Did you just say with new wars come new web hacks?
Yeah, I did.
Like,
sort of
that's
say
a
that
thing. I mean, I think you're right, but like, when did that become a thing?
I don't know, but I'm noticing now that it is a thing, and it happened yet again yesterday, and in fact, into today. I'm not sure why the New York Times itself was targeted. I mean, I can guess, but there's so many other really good targets that I would prefer. But evidence continued to mount that this was the result of an attack by. Anyone to guess?
Would it be the Syrian Electronic Army?
You've heard of them, yes. SEA. They're the group loyal to Syrian President Kyle? Not Syrian President Kyle. You say it so beautifully.
Bashar al-Assad.
Okay, there you guys. Every time we say his name, you're going to have to come to the microphone. They've been behind multiple attacks on media websites in recent months and also on Twitter, and they've taken credit for a sophisticated hack that had hobbled the news site for roughly 20 hours. They said in their Twitter feed, the New York Times attack was going to deliver an anti-war message, but our server couldn't last for 3 minutes. I'm not sure if they're criticizing their own server or just were surprised by the amount of traffic. The attack came as governments in several countries considered military action in light of reports that al-Assad has used chemical weapons against his own people in an effort to quell an uprising calling for his ouster. Our website and domain are now down, but it was worth the attempt for hashtag Syria and world peace. Boy, our world has gotten so weird, hasn't it?
Do you know that they were also supposedly behind an attack on the instant messaging network Viber just about a month ago, almost a month exactly ago?
The what now? The
it's
who?
Viber. Have you heard of Viber? Has anybody heard of Viber?
I don't even know how to spell that.
Viber, have you heard of WhatsApp? It's very, very similar to WhatsApp, but apparently Viber is run by an Israeli company.
Now, anyone can make up words, Alex.
It's true. Yeah, V-I-B-E-R. You can look it up, as somebody famous used to say. But apparently they defaced the website or hacked the I think it was the website and mentioned something about the Israelis spying on you via Viber. But I wonder about attribution.
Via Viber. You just
via
said that.
Viber. Okay. I did say it. But wonder about attribution here. I mean, how do we know the Syrian Electronic Army is really behind? Anybody can say they're the Syrian Electronic Army and post something in some broken English, but how do we know?
Will you say you're the Syrian Electronic Army, Alex?
I will say I'm not the Syrian Electronic
See,
Army.
See, not everyone will say it.
That's true.
All right, then.
That's true. That's a very good point.
That's the exact sort of thing, though, that someone who wasn't the Syrian Electronic Army might say to misdirect us.
I can't confirm or deny anything there.
Well, the New York Times, for what it's worth, sent out news headlines via Twitter because people couldn't get to their website. They also, this is kind of odd, they advised their employees not to send out sensitive emails until the situation is resolved. So apparently they thought that their emails might be compromised in addition to their website.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. The way the attack worked was by changing the DNS of the New York Times, which is the thing that happens. So when you type nytimes.com into your browser, it knows what computer, where on the internet that computer is. So if the attackers had control to change where the website was, they probably also had control to change where the email went. And I don't know if they did do so or not, but it's a reasonable precaution.
So, in actuality, this is reminds me of what happened to 2600 a few years ago. It seems that their registrar was the one that was hacked, not the New York Times.
That's what I've heard, yeah.
Okay, and their registrar, everyone knows who their registrar is now because it's been appearing in all the stories. Melbourne IT, apparently they were attacked, and that's why the New York Times was unreachable or compromised. It's Yeah, while the site was down, New York Times continued to post articles at its numerical IP address. And, of course, we all know what that is, 170.149.168.130. And also at this neat little site, news.nytco.com. They thought of everything, didn't they? Yesterday's episode was the Times' second sustained website outage this month. Newspaper site also went down August 14th for several hours, an outage the newspaper blamed on an internal issue. Maybe the Syrian Electronic Army was inside the building. I don't know. In an update on a company blog, Twitter confirmed that there was a DNS issue with one of the domains used to host images. Viewing of images and photos was sporadically impacted by 2229 UTC. The original domain record for twimg.com was restored. No Twitter user information was affected by this incident. And if it was, who cares? You know, it's Twitter. Get over it. Go ahead, Bernie.
This could very well not be a state actor, the Syrian government. This could be just some person who has Syrian sympathies or a false flag operation. I mean, if this was a state actor, it would seem to be more beneficial to the Syrian government for them to monitor the New York Times emails, maybe for sources to find out who maybe some Syrian activists' email addresses were, or that sort of thing. This just seems sort of an amateurish thing, kind of like what happened to 2600.com quite a few years ago, a website you'd redirect. So I don't know, a DNS redirect. So do you think this is a state actor? What do you think?
I think the state probably has more important things to worry about than hacking a website.
Yeah, right now especially.
So, you know, it doesn't. There's a lot about what's going on and what's about to happen that strikes me as a bit odd and not necessarily believable, what we're being told. But then again, what's unusual there? Every time we go down this road, we're lied to. So let's just accept the fact we're being lied to in advance and just assume that nothing is the truth and act on that.
You know, and another thing to think about as well, Bernie, is, you know, this also comes on the heels of various pundits on various news stations claiming that in addition to some kind of missile strike, we will also probably engage in a, quote, cyber attack, unquote, on Syria as well. I know we're all really fond of the word.
But how is that going to be? The U.S. government is going to go out and hack some sites in Syria? Is that the plan?
I think they were looking for the equivalent of the Syria New York Times, and they wanted to redirect their DNS records. I think that's exactly what a state actor would probably do.
And what this means, and this happens every time there's some kind of a conflict like this or an argument, whether it be with China or Russia or whoever, we'll get deluged with mail from people saying you must do your patriotic duty and hack the enemy site for the good of your country. And basically, hackers are thought of as soldiers in that regard. That's what they want. They want us to act as if we're soldiers. And it doesn't work that way. They will never understand this, but it does not work this way. So a week from now, who knows? Who knows what will be happening, what state the world will be in? I'm sure there'll be more news reports to talk about. But speaking of lying and subterfuge and things like that, the NSA has bugged the United Nations New York headquarters. That's according to a report that could further strain relations between Washington and everybody else. Citing secret U.S. documents obtained by fugitive former intelligence contractor Edward Snowden. How do you like that on a business card? Germany's Der Spiegel said the files showed how the U.S. systematically spied on other states and institutions. The report said the European Union and the UN's Vienna-based nuclear watchdog, the International Atomic Energy Agency, were among those targeted by U.S. intelligence agents. In the summer of 2012, NSA experts succeeded in getting into the UN video conferencing system and cracking its coding system, according to one of the documents cited in the report. The data traffic gives us internal video teleconferences of the United Nations. Yay! Exclamation point. That's a quote from one of the documents. That's the NSA talking there. Yay. Adding that within 3 weeks, the number of decoded communications rose from 12 to 458. Internal files also show the NSA spied on the EU legation in New York after it moved to new rooms in 2012. Among the documents, copied by Snowden from NSA computers, are part of the EU mission, its IT infrastructure, and servers. According to the documents, the NSA runs a bugging program in more than 80 embassies and consulates worldwide called Special Collection Service. Straight out of Brazil. The film, that is, not the country. The surveillance is intensive and well-organized and has little or nothing to do with warding off terrorists, said the report. Bernie, what do you make of this? The report, the NSA report, is saying that this has nothing to do with warding off terrorists?
It says, wrote Der Spiegel. It's hard to see from this story that's not reported by Reuters whether it's Der Spiegel saying that the surveillance is intensive and well-organized, that has little or nothing to do with the warding off terrorists, or the NSA. But I doubt the NSA would say that about itself.
Yeah, it doesn't seem right. So I guess we're looking at the report by Der Spiegel that this...
But what amuses me is that the NSA is saying, all the way from DNI Clapper on down, and General Alexander at NSA, that all these programs are designed to thwart terrorism. If they're targeting the UN... do they think the UN is full of terrorists? And if so, what are they trying to protect us from, the UN black helicopters and UN world domination? Should the Pentagon maybe just drop a cruise missile, use the Bush doctrine of preemptive strikes and drop a bomb on the enemy UN territory in Midtown Manhattan? I mean, what is this? What is this?
I think, they would say, if they were on the show, and I wish they were, they would say that information is power. They just want to know what's going on. And it's like if you monitor your child to know that they're not talking to dangerous people on the internet. You do that out of love, all right? And that is why the United States bugs the United Nations. It's out of love. It's out of love to make sure they don't do the wrong thing.
So this is the closest you're going to get from me to a defense of the NSA, but their job is to monitor foreign governments. That's why they were created. It's really hard to be surprised that they are in fact monitoring foreign governments. I don't want to say it's okay, but it's a lot more okay than them monitoring individuals who have done nothing wrong.
Well, would you say it's okay then for all other foreign espionage agencies to converge on the United Nations in New York and do the same thing? After all, that's, we're not supposed to have this kind of an advantage, but apparently we do.
I'm sure there are a number of foreign intelligence agencies that either have done or would very much like to do it. And again, I don't want to say it's okay, but it's a lot less shocking to me.
Don't they have advantage because it's like home turf?
Yeah, I mean, there already is that advantage, obviously. So it's just, it really seems glaringly unfair. And imagine how the rest of the world feels.
I think this is about information, though. That and also this, like, cyber warfare attacks and taking down websites and DNS poisoning. Because all of it, basically, is an adjunct to being able to spy and do other things because you can distract people.
You know, I agree with Mike here. I think that these international organizations, places like the EU, the United Nations, I honestly, and especially foreign sovereigns, embassies, things like that, that's pretty much fair game. That's what intelligence is all about. We have to think that, what really is the nature of intelligence? The nature of intelligence, it's basically a raw ingredient. It's a raw ingredient for foreign policy decision making. It's what goes to the president. The more intelligence you have, the more better informed he is about what decisions to make in the interest of the United States. I think these types of organizations are fair game. If we stop doing it, we would be behind the ball. We'd be behind the curve. And I personally don't think that I would want our country to stop spying on these organizations and our friends and neighbors in that sense and sovereigns. I think that's okay. When we get down to individuals, human beings, that's a different story entirely.
All right. Well, let me just take you guys up on this then. If it is fair game that the NSA does this at the UN, then why is the United States government so upset when it's revealed? If everybody knows this is what goes on, then how come they want to put this guy on a crucifix, Ed Snowden, for revealing the information that everybody knows?
Well, I think it's difficult to attribute the desire to crucify Edward Snowden specifically to this revelation. I think there's plenty of revelations about which they'd like to go Pontius Pilate on him. But I don't think that this one is necessarily it. I mean, to anybody who is familiar with these types of things, this honestly, it is routine. I mean, it goes back to World War I when we didn't have an intelligence agency and we started something called the Black Chamber. And I think it was Secretary of State Henry Stimson who basically established a prohibition on spying and said, you know, we do not, gentlemen, do not read each other's mail. And the United States didn't spy. We were behind the gun. We were behind the ball. And then we established this black chamber where we started to do a little bit of spying. We caught up to speed. And, hey, when it's nation against nation, I'm fine with that. Let them play their cat and mouse game.
Yeah, I'm all for the cat and mouse game as long as everybody gets a cat and a mouse. It just seems to me that, you know, the United Nations is right here in New York, and we have such an unfair advantage. And whenever the United Nations doesn't do what we want it to do, we do it anyway. And I refer to the upcoming Syrian actions, because the United Nations Security Council is not going to pass anything that we want it to pass, for right or wrong, and we're just going to bypass them.
Who are we in this?
You know damn well who we are, Mike. Let's not play that game.
But I think that just makes the case too spy even more compelling. So if the United Nations isn't going to go our way and we're going to do it anyway, then we might as well be prepared to do it. We might as well know ahead of time that they're not going to go our way.
Bernie, any thoughts?
Well, I agree. I think it's definitely with Mike, what he's saying is it's less, I'm going to put words in his mouth, but I agree that it's less harmful for governments to spy on each other than for governments to spy on individuals and provide a chilling effect on individual speech, which is what's happening right now, and journalist speech, who are individuals. So, yes, the NSA was formed to gather foreign intelligence, primarily from foreign governments, I would expect, and maybe non-state actors like terrorists, that sort of thing. I don't have any moral qualms with this. I just think I have some moral qualms with the hypocrisy that the NSA is saying, oh, no, we're not doing this, or we shouldn't be exposed for doing this. I mean, that's just silly.
Okay. Well, moving on to more NSA actions. National Security Agency officers on several occasions, and this shouldn't really surprise anyone, have channeled their agency's enormous eavesdropping power to spy on love interests. That's according to U.S. officials. Now, the practice isn't frequent, they say. One official estimated a handful of cases in the last decade, but it's common enough to garner its own spycraft label of love int. Yeah. Spy agencies often refer to their various types of intelligence collection with the suffix of int, I-N-T, such as SIGINT for collecting signals intelligence or communications, and HUMINT for human intelligence or spying. Now, in the wake of revelations last week that NSA had violated privacy rules on nearly 3,000 occasions in a one-year period, NSA Chief Compliance Officer John DeLong emphasized in a conference call with reporters last week that those errors were unintentional. He did say that there have been a couple of willful violations in the past decade. He said he didn't have the exact figures at the moment and probably never would. NSA said in a statement on Friday that there have been very rare instances of willful violations of any kind in the past decade. None have violated key surveillance laws. NSA has zero tolerance for willful violations of the agency's authorities and responds as appropriate. The Love Int violations involved overseas communications, officials said, such as spying on a partner or spouse, and in each instance, the employee was punished either with an administrative action or termination. And most of the incidents, according to the officials, were self-reported. Such admissions can arise, for example, when an employee takes polygraph tests as part of a renewal of a security clearance. So, is this even worth mentioning?
I think the key sentence in this article is that most of the people who were caught were the ones who self-reported. Is that the term? So if you are willing to lie about it, if you are willing to say, I didn't spy on my love interest, apparently you can get away with it. And we know that the internal controls are ineffective because of a very useful case of violating one's authority, which was Edward Snowden, did not get caught until he appeared on camera and said, hey, I took, you know, thousands of documents with me. So it seems to me all but certain that there are many more cases of this love int who do not self-report and do not get caught by any internal system. I don't know why we should believe almost anything else in the report.
Or anything else the NSA says.
Well, I'm going to go out and I'm going to say, you know, go way on a limb here. I'm going to say it's absolutely fine to collect love int so long as your girlfriend works at the UN. completely fine with me. But no, I think more seriously to the point, it's interesting that the communications targeted were overseas communications, because that would give them some kind of plausible deniability that they were doing this for a legitimate purpose. if they weren't collecting domestic communications, if they could, maybe they would. So maybe that says something about their capabilities. But the fact that it was targeted to overseas communications is interesting. And then, like Mike said, the self-reporting aspect is also interesting, probably as a result of the security clearance processes and the renewal. But, you know, when I was at Black Hat a couple of weeks ago and I heard General Alexander speak about this, you know, he did mention that there were some screw-ups, but that this internal audit program that they have would eventually catch it, and that this training was very, very rigorous, and that there was all this oversight about all the collection and whether or not somebody was a U.S. person. And it all seems to be able to be just thrown out if they decide it. If they decide that this person is not a U.S. person, which is an assumption they had to make when they started to collect that Lovent, then they could do what they wanted to do. That's a little scary to me.
Well, I'd like to talk about the speech that you witnessed and how he addressed these huge issues, and if he tried to excuse any of the things that the NSA has been complicit in, or had anything to say about Snowden, or was asked any challenging questions whatsoever.
Well, two things. You raised two really interesting points there because and I don't know if anybody noticed this, but during the entire speech, he did not say the word Snowden once. Not once. It was very interesting. And another curious fact was that basically there were probably about 3,000 people in the room at Black Hat there. I was there with a colleague. He saved a seat for me. And he says, you know, I'm kind of in the middle, maybe about five rows back from the front. I meet him there. And it turns out that we were sitting next to the one person who decided to heckle General Alexander the entire time. It was slightly embarrassing sitting there, and the media was watching me. I thought I didn't want anybody to attribute the heckling to me. But what General Alexander always went back to when people would criticize him about reading the Constitution or you lied to Congress or this is an illegal program or something like that, he would constantly go back to the issue of oversight. And he claimed, look, there's oversight in so many aspects of this. There is oversight from our General Counsel and National Security Agency and his set of lawyers. There's oversight in the audit process. There is oversight from Congress and all the members of Congress and their staff. And there's oversight from the executive level. There's oversight in his staff and his lawyers. And look, everybody has said this is a legal program. There's oversight, let's not forget, from a U.S. federal court, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court, and these federally appointed lifetime judges. There's so much oversight in this program. You have to trust us. That was what he kept going back to. And what I keep saying is I think that this oversight, especially in Congress, was what failed us. This is it's a political problem, and I think it requires a political solution.
My impression was there's very little oversight and very little accountability. All these things are being kept secret, and we're being told that the laws are being followed, but we play no part in these laws. We don't even know what these laws are half the time that they talk about in secret, and it just basically strikes me as a whole bunch of subterfuge and lies. My question is, did they call him on this? Did people stand up and ask him questions that made him visibly squirm?
There were questions that basically were volunteered to him without anybody calling on this particular person. In fact, this was the person that was sitting one seat away from me. And one interesting repartee was basically, so the last heckle, and you do have to call it a heckle because this was an unsolicited question that was yelled at, was, read the Constitution. And General Alexander, as a retort, said, I did. You should, too.
I think maybe that person was planted by Mr. Alexander.
Right? It's possible.
I mean, well, General Alexander clearly reads all kinds of things. But it's really worrying to me that we have all these levels of oversight, and we know they're ineffective. Like, we know they're ineffective. It's no longer a question. Part of it, you know, I don't want to defend the Congress. I already defended the NSA. The Congress, I don't want to defend at all. But the heads of these agencies have shown that they are willing to go and lie before the Congress. So, you know, Congress should maybe wise up a little bit and not fall for it. But it is harder to do the oversight job correctly when the people you're overseeing are willing to lie to you so blatantly.
Yeah, I think you raise a very, very interesting point here, Mike, because when you look at the agencies involved and the people that are involved, these are political actors. the people that are making these decisions with regard to oversight are, in fact, political appointees. You look at the General Counsel of the National Security Agency, political appointee. General Counsel of basically every single intelligence agency is a political appointee. Now, the people that work for him are not political appointees, but the political appointee can tell the executive and the oversight committees, which are also very, very political actors, what they want to hear. So if it's there's a political endemic here, and this is why I keep saying I think that the legal system isn't the place to solve these problems. I think it's a matter of we the people. It's a matter of people getting riled up about this and telling their politicians they don't appreciate it, because when we make it very political, we hold people accountable. And without that accountability, I don't think anything is going to change in this sphere.
All right. Well, moving on. Remember back a couple of months ago when Edward Snowden was expected to fly through Cuba, and instead a whole bunch of journalists wound up flying there and getting stranded. Well, a story has come out. This was reported on Reuters. Former U.S. spy agency contractor Snowden got stuck in the transit zone of a Moscow airport because Havana said it would not let him fly from Russia to Cuba. That's according to a Russian newspaper that reported this on Monday. Now, citing several sources, including one close to the U.S. State Department, the newspaper said the reason was at the last moment, the reason he was stranded and didn't go, at the last moment, Cuba told officials to stop Snowden from boarding the Aeroflot flight. It said Cuba had changed its mind after pressure by the United States, which wants to try Snowden on espionage charges. Now, just today, I heard that former President Fidel Castro angrily denied this. He actually got up out of his bed to do this, and that should tell you how passionately he feels about it. But it's just weird to see a story like this because, and this sentence in particular, Reuters cannot immediately verify the report. Allowing Snowden to land would have put Cuba's relations with the United States at risk. What relations? There are no relations. It's a horrible relationship. Why would they care if it got any worse? I just cannot imagine that. Something about this just doesn't make sense, and I don't think Cuba is in the habit of kowtowing to the United States, unless I'm really not seeing something.
I mean, it's possible the U.S. offered Cuba something for this action, but this story needs a lot more evidence before I really believe it.
All right, and moving down to New Zealand, police affidavits related to the raid on Kim.com's mega mansion appear to show that New Zealand police and spy agencies are able to tap directly into United States surveillance systems such as PRISM to capture email and other traffic. Yes, we're hearing about PRISM again. The discovery was made by a blogger who wrote that the Organized and Financial Crime Agency of New Zealand, OFCENS, requested assistance from the Government Communications Security Bureau, the country's Signals Intelligence Unit, SIGINT, as we described, which is in charge of surveilling the Pacific region under the Five Eyes Agreement. A list of so-called selectors or search terms were provided to GCSB by the police for the surveillance of emails and other data traffic generated by .com and his Mega Upload associates. Some selectors of interest were redacted out, but others, such as Kim.com's email addresses, the mail proxy server used for some of the accounts and websites, remained in the documents that were obtained. And of course, as we've reported, .com's mansion was raided by New Zealand police last year for crimes related to online piracy based on indictments filed in the United States. And a very interesting case as it continues to unfold. One note on the reports generated from the surveillance points to the system used capturing real-time traffic. Several of the documents are classified as confidential comint New Zealand eyes only, with one being marked as secret comint related to New Zealand, Australia, Canada, Great Britain, USA. The spying on .com, his wife, and others was deemed to be illegal as all three are residents of New Zealand and the GCSB is precluded by current law from intercepting these communications. In the United States, declassified government documents have been released to the Electronic Frontier Foundation that show the NSA operates an eavesdropping program that has direct access to internet communications. So, yeah, it appears that PRISM is somewhat real based on this.
I mean, we know that the spying is real from this and many other pieces of evidence. I read the documents, and maybe I missed something, but the PRISM itself was not mentioned, so it's possible this data came from the PRISM program, from the X-Keyscore program that we mentioned a few weeks ago that is, I think, much more frightening than the PRISM program. It's possible it came from some other program that we don't know the name of yet. I don't think the names of the programs are the important thing. I think it's the spying that these governments have the power to do. That's the frightening thing. Not the ugly logo.
Bernie, any feedback on that?
Well, it does sound like Kim.com is building a good defense case for himself. We'll remain to be seen where that's going to go. But he seems to have a lot of good defense information he's putting together to show that his rights were violated every which way to raid his property and seize his belongings. So we'll see where that goes.
Okay. We are going to take phone calls in just a little bit, and I'll give out the phone number. Actually, I have to look over here because I never remember this new phone number that we're not going to have for much longer. It's 212-650-5782, and we can only take one call at a time, and we'll be taking calls in a few minutes, just so your listeners out there can get ready for that. I don't think we've taken phone calls in a while, have we? So we weren't on the air for a while, and we had a number of phone guests over the past few weeks and a lot of interesting things to talk about, so we'd like to hear from our listeners. And, of course, you can write to us here at Off the Hook, OTH@2600.com, as we continue to broadcast here, WBAI, here in Harlem, and soon in Brooklyn. That's the word. And, yes, there have been a lot of changes around here, a lot of painful changes, but we are continuing in a time of transition. I think in the end we're going to get a much better place, much better station, much better programming, but that all depends on our listeners, obviously, as far as their support. Continuing with the next chapter in the Bradley Manning case, shortly after the verdict last week, a statement was issued by Manning, and I'm going to read that statement. I want to thank everybody who has supported me over the last 3 years. Throughout this long ordeal, your letters of support and encouragement have helped keep me strong. I am forever indebted to those who wrote to me, made a donation to my defense fund, or came to watch a portion of the trial. I would especially like to thank Courage to Resist and the Bradley Manning Support Network for their tireless efforts in raising awareness for my case and providing for my legal representation. As I transition into this next phase of my life, I want everyone to know the real me. I am Chelsea Manning. I am a female. Given the way that I feel and have felt since childhood, I want to begin hormone therapy as soon as possible. I hope that you will support me in this transition. I also request that starting today, you refer to me by my new name and use the feminine pronoun, except an official mail to the confinement facility. I look forward to receiving letters from supporters and having the opportunity to write back. Thank you, Chelsea E. Manning. And the E has been changed from Edward to Elizabeth as well. And it's the story continues to be very interesting, but I think it's something very basic and simple here. If you respect somebody, you respect their wishes. And I think anyone who respects what Bradley Manning, Chelsea Manning has done should respect this. It's a simple thing. If you can call Snoop Dogg Snoop Lion, if you can refer to somebody as Prince or Madonna because that's what they want you to refer to them as, or be referred to as a female because they identify as being a female more than being a male, that's simple human respect. And I think we certainly owe Chelsea Manning that much. That said, I don't want to jump all over people who get the pronouns wrong or get mixed up. It can be confusing, I know, and there are newspapers that are reporting all kinds of different ways. It's somewhat amusing to see how they mess it up. But let's focus on what's important here, basically respecting Chelsea Manning and realizing what has been done here, what has been revealed. And I think the story continues to be very much alive. But let's not trivialize it in any way. Being transgender is very, very difficult. Just here in this neighborhood, in the past couple of days, we had a brutal killing of a transgender woman. And this kind of thing happens even in a city like New York all the time. And it's very important. And it's huge. It's huge for somebody already going through hell to stand up and say something like that. So I continue to respect this individual for being an individual. Not the easiest thing in the world to do.
I do want to distinguish, though, between people who make honest errors in pronouns and people who intentionally are mean. And some of our media has been intentionally mean. And to the extent that any of these authors care what I think, I don't think that's okay.
Well, I mean, they've been mean from the start. They've been saying that that Bradley Manning at the time deserves to be hung for treason, and that's kind of mean. So I'm not surprised that they're being mean in this particular regard as well.
I didn't say I was surprised at all.
Uh-huh. But, and by all means, yes, if people are being disrespectful, they should be called on that. But it's educational, fascinating, interesting, all of this. And we cannot forget and we cannot just brush it aside. And that's why we have to continue to follow this case even after the sentencing has happened. Alex.
Yeah, I completely agree with you, Emmanuel. I think as you so rightly pointed out, this is really a matter of respect. It's a matter of human dignity. I think it's also important to note that she has gone through hell, as you said. This has been very, very difficult. She has not been treated with anything or in a manner that even resembles the human dignity that any human being should be afforded. So I think using the right pronouns, trying to be as respectful as possible as her wishes, I think is very, very important. I think as her supporters, we owe her that much. We're all very progressive people. We're good human beings. We're listening to WBAI. This is something we can all understand. I feel like we're preaching to the choir here. But yet at the same time, it's a very important point to make.
Well, we are in many ways preaching to the choir. And in other ways, members of other choirs or other communities are going to listen to us too and maybe not quite get it right away. And what I'm saying is we need to be a little bit patient and understanding and try to teach people, not condemn so quickly. I've seen a lot of condemnation of people who don't quite get it. And, that's kind of defeatist, I think. I don't think we'll get anywhere that way.
And from a human rights perspective, of whether or not the military system is going to accommodate this hormone therapy or permit it to occur, that's another issue entirely. This is something that we shouldn't lose track of, and we should continue to follow as her supporters. I think we owe her that much to try to track these issues and make sure that those people that have the power to help her are actually, in fact, helping her.
All right. A couple of letters I'd like to read before we move to phone calls. Greetings, and the pronouns here might be off because some of these letters have been written before. I feel that Mr. Manning was likely in the right regarding releasing the video where civilians were killed. I do not feel that Mr. Manning was correct in releasing various quote-unquote cables or emails, which do not out anyone specifically, but anyone doing an analysis could easily pick up on code words, tactics, etc., and cause problems, not to mention the issue with diplomacy. Please do not advocate everything that Manning did. I know the slant of your show is not exactly pro-government when it comes to these type of issues, but discretion is required. You rhetorically asked on the air if the soldiers responsible for gunning down civilians were punished. They were not punished because they were following orders to open fire. Considering that the quote-unquote bad guys in these wars we are fighting do not wear obvious uniforms, I don't think the soldiers were in the wrong. Snowden, on the other hand, is to be applauded for having the guts to out that PowerPoint presentation on PRISM. Thanks, John Z, for your letter. But I disagree pretty strongly. I think most of us probably do. Mike, would you like to voice that?
Yeah, so a few years ago when this story first came to our attention, this might have been, I think, I disagreed at the time, but it might have been a reasonable argument to make. But what has happened, as our listeners know, is that there was a trial which went on for some months, in which the government attempted to prove that anybody at all was harmed by Manning's actions, and the government did not do so. They did not provide any public evidence that anyone was harmed by Manning's actions. So I don't think there's really any reason to believe that anyone was harmed.
And I am just so sick of the excuse that they were just following orders. Well, those orders were wrong. And people like Manning knew this. People like Snowden knew this. And journalists like Assange and Greenwald know this, which is why they focus on it. And we need many, many more people to do the same, because just following orders, that doesn't cut it.
I mean, if we think that just following orders is okay, then we can go after the people who gave the orders. I'd be totally fine with that as a substitute or as a replacement. But the other thing that caught my attention about this letter was the use of the term bad guys, which is a term I don't generally use, but
it was in quotes.
Yeah, but it's not clear to me how the people living in the country fighting the occupying power are automatically the bad guys just because they don't speak the same language as I do. Definitely there are bad guys, bad girls, bad people of all sorts, on all sides of this, but I would have to, if you had like a classic movie villain, it would be the one with the guns invading your country. So I don't know.
Well said.
Emmanuel?
Yes, go ahead, Bernie.
I just want to also point out there's a premise here that we're missing, and that is that the people who killed innocent Reuters journalists in the U.S. military were not just following orders. They said that they saw people carrying certain weapons, like an RPV, like a portable missile launcher. That was not true. And then they received it, once they said that, they received the orders to kill them. So at the very least, those soldiers should be disciplined for falsely, maybe not intentionally, but making a critical error that resulted in the death of innocent people. And you can't just fall back on the following orders. The orders resulted from them giving bad information to the people who were giving them orders.
Yeah, outright lying. But then again, with people like Clapper in charge, that's the standard. Let's read another letter. Just wanted to clear up some things from the recent show about Leavenworth, which is where Chelsea Manning will be serving her sentence. There is the city of Leavenworth, Kansas, and Fort Leavenworth, located in Kansas. Fort Leavenworth came first as a camp to help control the indigenous people in the region. The city of Leavenworth has what is called the United States Penitentiary, and Fort Leavenworth has the United States Disciplinary Barracks. Don't we live in a wonderful country? The USDB was built a few years before the USP was put up. Eventually, the USDB, I think, deteriorated so badly, a new one was finally built around 2000, and the old one torn down. The old one could house about 2,000 inmates, but since a drawdown of the number of troops and an increased number of regional confinement facilities for the branches of military, the new one holds 500 inmates. Thank you, Trent, for that. I don't know why I'm echoing like that, but I'm going to turn you down, Bernie. Thank you, Trent, for that information on where our various prisons stand. And this final letter before we take some phone calls at... was it 212-650-5782? Once again, Off the Hook is completely losing focus and turning into the let's read political news stories for an hour and state the obvious. Again, isn't this show supposed to be about technology, hacking, hackers, and such? I am so sick of hearing about the same news stories over and over again about how the U.S. government sucks. I get it. I listen to Off the Hook as the alternative to the Everyone Is Out to Get You Alex Jones Occupy Liberal Radio Hour. Wow, Alex Jones, huh? I'm very disappointed in the show's tired out political content. Let's just bitch about the government for an hour and come back next week with nothing to show for it. Also, I can't hear Bernie. The audio for people on the phone is so low and the people in the studio so loud that it's getting really annoying. I'm catching up on back shows and this has been going on for at least a year. Signed, Angelo. Angelo, thank you for your comments. And, you know, we're aware of some problems with audio, like right now, for instance, with the echo. But Bernie, maybe you could just speak a little louder and, maybe you have something to say about that letter.
And it wasn't just me. They said it was when other people are on the phone as well. So maybe when we move to the new studios in Brooklyn, that problem could be addressed with new equipment. We'll see.
Do you have anything to say about the other points you raised?
About us being political. Well, I don't think you can separate the technology that we talk about from politics when you look at the big picture. I mean, I think they're inseparable. And they're really, I don't know of any other media outlet besides Off the Hook that's really consistently focusing on how these technologies are being abused to affect us, all of us, and the political process. So, I'm sorry, I really don't have any apologies for our content. We do focus on some technical aspects of things, but how they pertain to how these technologies are being abused by governments and others to affect people.
I, however, do want to offer an apology for the annoying sound that was taking place while you were speaking. That's the other phone line ringing, and we don't have the ability, apparently, to filter that out. But that, again, will disappear once we move to new studios. Kyle.
Well, I just want to say one thing about the Chelsea Manning statement that was released. Basically, let's keep in mind that before she was, joining as Bradley, she's grappling with that, right? And it says in the statement that it was something that she was aware of from a young age, but it takes time to like grow and get the confidence to say that even to yourself. and be comfortable with that as like an identity going forward. And I just think it's interesting, or just worth really being considerate of, the fact that the environment that she was in from the time she was Bradley to now Chelsea was extremely hostile and like not supportive of at all. So usually it's through like positive community. Sometimes it's from like negative stuff that you get pushed to that, but either way, it's like really, really difficult to imagine how like, I don't know, actual like reassignment and hormone therapy is like working in the context, not just logistically, but as a like solution, as like the best thing. So, I don't know. I think everybody like being supportive of that choice and using the pronouns is helpful, but there's a lot of other support that hopefully she'll have access to given where she's going to be for the next couple of years.
And hopefully it won't be longer than that, but we'll just have to see. And more information can be found at freebradleymanning.org. I think a squatter is sitting on freechelseamanning.org. Unfortunately, that wasn't thought out as far as getting that site reserved. But let's take some phone calls from listeners now. Again, the phone number 212-650-5782. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Yes, hi. My name's Rose.
Yeah, you're going to have to speak up or there's going to be a horrible sound.
Is that better?
A little bit.
Okay. I just wanted to talk about Bradley Manning you were mentioning.
Okay, go ahead.
Hi. this is Rose. I've gone to, you know, to the hearings. I've talked to you before, Emmanuel.
Yes, you've talked on the other radio show. I'm sorry about the condition of our phone line, so please try and speak up, and we only have a few minutes.
Okay, yeah. No, I was just saying that I was glad to hear what you said about the name, because I was... simply myself, I was just trying to be respectful, and I may not agree with, personally, I don't agree with his timing, because now we have to have people coming out of the woodwork, these idiots, you know, obsessing about his name, and you know, they don't believe that he wants to be, you know, called Chelsea, and just, you know, a lot of controversy about it. But if we could just, you know, respect his wishes. That's all.
I think that's exactly it.
I'm struggling with that too. I keep have to catch myself, and I'm trying to say she, and just because she wants it, and that's it.
Exactly. Rose, thank you so much, and thanks for all the courage you've shown, and for telling people about the trial and the case, and you've opened up a lot of eyes.
Oh, thank you. All right.
All right. Let's take another phone call, and let's hope that we don't get a horrible sound every time that we take a second call on this. Let's try it here. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Oh, hi. Well, I wanted to congratulate you on a fantastic program.
Thank you. Please speak into your receiver and a little bit louder and turn down your radio. Thank you.
I'll turn off the radio. It will take me about 10 seconds. I'll be right back.
10 seconds. Why do people sit so far away from their radios? I don't understand that.
Very good question.
Yeah, all right. Again, phone number 212-650-5782. Are you back?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, thanks for having that media debate that really needs to take place. At times like this, I don't mean to harp too much about it, but you really make me feel like WBAI is necessary, which I must say, Ed, I do not feel all the time. But it's the first time I heard of the... presumed attack on the New York Times is a psyop in preparation for an attack, and it's a very acute observation. And although you didn't say that, I constructed that, but it was pretty clear where the conversation was going. And the other thing is, you know, you must be careful about being a victim of that yourself, because, you know, this climate, the conversation that followed, especially one comment, one guy was commenting like he was being ready to be recruited. I couldn't believe what I was hearing. But, you know, it's good that there should be different voices saying different things. But at the same time, you know, it's twofold. One is it's wrong to spy on the UN, period. And two, this is not a casual outing of this story, because it's obviously being used to distract the public's attention from the spying that the government has been perpetrating to the damages of citizens. And that must not be forgotten. I will hang up and listen to the comments of other people. Thank you so much.
Okay, thanks. Thanks for your phone call there. And again, the phone number 212-650-5782. And do we have another call coming in? We do. Okay, let's take this one. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Speak up, please. Okay, I'm sorry, but if you don't speak up, we can't. Okay, the phone is malfunctioning. Does anybody want to say anything while I fix the phone?
Sure. You know, in response to the last caller about being recruited, you just have to be careful because you never know who's already been recruited.
The phone is fixed, by the way.
Okay, so the phone's fixed.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
And we have a phone call. Oh, boy. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Yeah, hi. I was still upset with the long sentence they're giving our wonderful Manley.
Just turn down your radio, please. That's all I ask.
Oh, I have no radio on.
Oh, yeah, I hear voices. Okay, never mind.
Also, let's keep encouraging him. He doesn't deserve to stay in jail that long, and it's just outrageous. He deserves an award the way WikiLeaks said, a Nobel Prize for what he did, rather than to be jailed and mistreated.
Okay, thanks for your opinion.
Right.
All right. And we only have a couple minutes left, so if there's something that you'd like to add to the conversation, please call us now. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Yes, hello.
It's Tom from the Bronx.
Yes, it is.
How you doing?
And I'd like to say that Snowden, I heard you mention Snowden. I thought he was going to stay in Russia. Wasn't he going to stay in Russia?
Oh, he is staying in Russia. If he knows what's good for him, I think that's where he's going
to
stay.
What was this thing about him coming to Cuba?
Oh, that was originally what the plan was, to go, I believe, to Venezuela through Cuba. And that flight, for some reason, didn't happen. And according to that Russian newspaper, the reason it didn't happen was because Cuba kowtowed to United States pressure, something that Fidel Castro today vehemently denied.
I think that Cuba may have been afraid the U.S. would invade them, too.
Yeah, that, I believe a lot of things, but I somehow don't think that the United States would invade Cuba over that, but who knows?
I don't know. I mean, there may be a paranoia that hit Cuba, you know.
Anything's possible, I suppose. Any other thoughts?
I think that Snowden did a wonderful thing when he dropped the beans.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody else who dropped the beans, it's very good for the public here.
Well, we were taught to tell the truth when we were growing up, and I think sometimes the truth might be inconvenient, might hurt, but it's usually the best policy. Thanks thanks for your call. And hopefully we can squeeze one or two more phone calls in the couple of minutes that we have left. The phone number 212-650-5782. Let's take this call over here. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Speak up, please.
Hello.
Hi, what's on your mind?
I'd like to say that,
Yes,
I'd
please.
Like to, yeah, I'm sorry. Chelsea Manning, he it really was bad timing, like the other caller said. Now he's being heckled, and also, I don't think the torture period is over for him. I think when he goes to prison, they're going to continue to torture him and treat him terribly.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, the way I see it, this request happening right now, it's a very transitional period in many ways. Now, had the request been made before the trial, I think people would say that was even a worse period to do it in. But it's not about that. It's not about when the best period is. It's about one person's request, whenever they make that request. And I just think that we need to honor that.
You know, one important piece of information here is that, you know, the actual sentencing aspect isn't entirely over. He made this announcement during the clemency process as well. We cannot forget that he is going to submit some kind of petition, a clemency petition, to the convening authority, the general of the base, which referred the court-martial charges, and there is a possibility that the sentence can be reduced. She, making this revelation at this point, either means, or actually probably both means, that she is, number one, very, very brave in what she's about to face and what she has done, and number two, that this probably will not affect the clemency process because there's no hope there anyway.
Mike?
Yeah, I just don't think it's really up to us when Chelsea Manning decides to make these statements. As nice people, most of our listeners, I think, are nice people. We should just, you know, do as she asks. It's not that hard, I don't think, to change pronouns. Maybe I'm used to people who change at least their names all the time. You know, there's not going to be a good time in her life for the next
decades, even if she's released from prison. So, sure, now, why not?
Think of it this way. If there's one thing you can do to help relieve the pain even a little bit, if using a pronoun in a way that Chelsea Manning requests, how hard is it to do that, knowing that that helps a little bit, helps relieve this suffering that she'll be enduring for a while, hopefully not too long, but that's up to public pressure, and something that we'll have to continue talking about in weeks ahead. Write to us, oth@2600.com. We'd love to hear from you. We're out of time for tonight. Stay tuned for the Personal Computer Show. We'll be back again next week talking about, maybe a new war or whatever other NSA revelations have happened. Perhaps new websites will be hacked. Who knows? You're listening to WBAI New York. Manuel for Off the Hook. See you next week. Good night.
And it is 8 p.m. You're tuned to listener-sponsored, non-commercial WBAI in New York. Time now for the Personal Computer Show. I think of a bad joke, but I can't.
Welcome to the Personal Computer Show. This is Hank Key, and today is August the 28th. And with me this evening is Max Schmid, and he is our engineer extraordinaire. And if the name sounds familiar, well, he does the old-time radio show, and we'll hear more about that later during the break. And with me this evening, we have Joe King, who is... Joe, are you there? Is Joe there? Joe, are you there? Maxie, is Joe on?
He should be there.
You mean we dropped him off? Well, we're going to have Joe King, and he'll be joining me on remote as he speaks to us while he's tinkling the his glass with tequila. Joe, are you there now?
I have been here. The tequila bottle got emptied somehow.
Well, can you speak with a little more soberness then? And we're going to right now connect with David Perry on the left coast, and I hope to hear his voice very shortly. And I'll just tell you briefly what we're going to cover tonight. We're going to talk about we've been talking about last week was the how you cannot rely on the cloud for everything. And one of the things that happened is that this past week, NASDAQ was out 3.5 hours, and they finally isolated the problem.
What was the problem?
NASDAQ said it was a New York Stock Exchange problem, and the New York Stock Exchange says, no, it was your problem. So therefore, when neither of them agrees, do you know, I can bet you the problem was not solved. All they did was just reloaded.
Did they try turning it off and turning it back on again?
No. What they did was hey, Dave, I'm glad that we have you now. And so I can now say that joining us on the left coast is David Perry, who's just gotten off his surfing out in Huntington Beach, and he's all wet right now. And
actually, I was out buying hardware. I was at the hardware store buying there's a hardware chain going out of business, so I went out and bought a lot of lighting circuits.
I don't mean to interrupt, David,
okay,
but perhaps you can tell our engineer that I can't hear a word that David's saying.
Then you're on that side of the conversation.
Okay, tonight. Max, you think you can correct that?
I can absolutely guarantee I cannot correct it.
Oh, well, that's excellent.
Let me try this one thing. I don't know if that's going to help.
Okay.
It is fellows endemic.
Can you hear him now, Joe?
No, of course.
David, if you're talking,
listen to me. Long as we have been in this studio,
yes,
one
I,
person
I do
of
not
the phone-in cannot be
wait,
heard.
Wait, stop. Both of you, stop. We are having a problem. We have a conflict.
We are having a problem. I know what the problem is, but Hank would get mad at me if I told him over the air what the problem is.
Well, no. Wait, hold it, guys. I see Maxie trying to use his slick little fingers and hit a button or two. And I think both of you can hear me, right?
I hear you perfectly.
Yes,
okay.
I can hear you, but Hank.
All right. Now, Joe, you speak, and let's see if David can hear you.
David, are you hearing me at all from the sunny beaches of West Coast?
He's not responding.
I can hear Joe fine.
David, say something.
Listen to me.
Joe, he can hear you.
He can.
Please, I beg you, listen to me. As long as we have been at this college, one of the call-ins cannot hear the other all the time.
But without fail. We have a different engineer, and he is
doesn't
trying to...
doesn't matter. It's the
same
setup.
Crappy system, however.
It's the system.
Well, I hear Max perfectly. But that's because Max is golden.
The golden age of radio. Listen, Max, is it possible that we can use your microphone to feed... David's phone call?
No, I don't. There is no way around it. There's only one phone
system.
I'll tell you what.
Why don't we do a little different, okay? Let's try this. Can you put David into the studio so he can be heard on the microphones?
No, I'm afraid that is also not a possibility.
Hank, this is just how this system works, period.
For a variety of reasons, it would be convenient for me to leave you here with my good wishes and join you again perhaps next week.
Oh, boy. Hey, you know what? I'm going to try something a little different, okay? I'm going to stay with David for the first half hour because we have a lot to talk about in security. And, Joe, I would like to get you back on the half hour because we have things to talk about that is more New Yorkish, and I think you can contribute to it, okay?
Excellent. Try me back in a half hour.
Okay, and you can finish drinking your tequila, but don't get drunk on it, all right? Okay, Joe. We'll get Joe King back on at the half hour, and we have David Perry on the left coast. And, David, one of the things I want to talk to you about was you know, as you know, NASDAQ was down for 3.5 hours, and I was very disappointed that they each have identified the problem, and it's like the other party. And what they what NASDAQ essentially did was rebooted the system, and it ran.
We're now getting the hang-up signal from Joe's telephone patch.
Oh, all right, here's my experiment to see which line is which.
Okay, how about now? Did you hear me?
I think I hung up the wrong phone.
You hung up the wrong phone.
What a technically proficient
and
lovely show. All right, well, Hank, carry on for about 30 seconds.
Oh, boy. Well, let me just say that one of the things that I was going to talk about was the fact that, you know, NASDAQ was down for 3.5 hours. WBAI, believe it or not, was down yesterday for 3.5 hours. But I think I know in the case of WBAI why we're down 3.5 hours, just that, you know, we don't do proper maintenance, and it's no different than the fact that we're having trouble with these phone lines. And
okay.
And it's very difficult to do a talk show where you have 1.5 lines. And, well, Maxie, were you able to get him back on?
He's back on.
Okay. Now, it's been reported that, you know, the New York Times was down yesterday for quite a bit of time, like also 3.5 hours. I don't know. It seems like 3.5 seems to be a magic number, okay? And, David, you want to comment on the attack that was attributed to the Syrian Electronic
Army? Well, Michael, I don't have any information about it, but Michael Horowitz said that it was not the Times themselves who was attacked. It was their registrar.
Correct. It was the registrar, but you know what? If you attack the registrar, I don't care where the gate is. You got attacked, whether... Because, you know, actually, what's even more frightening, David, is that if the registrar got attacked, it was a very selective one. They only picked the high profiles. What's prevent them from taking down the whole thing? What they did was they... Go ahead.
There isn't a lot protecting anything. There isn't a lot of security built into Internet protocol, nor is there into the system of registration, nor is there into the domain name service.
Well,
there's not a lot of security. In fact, the things we think of as secure, like HTTPS, are not that secure. The certification system isn't very secure. We've seen it get hacked over and over again. There are a lot of holes in the security of the basic structure of the Internet. And this is what we're going to have, is going to happen pretty much full time, and goes on happening. And people still don't realize it. Now, the main thing that differs you and me from many of our listening audiences, and I'm not meaning to put you off, listening audience, but what you don't realize about your computer is the part that you can see is only the paint job on the tip of the iceberg. There's 100 million moving parts for every key that you touch that you can't see and you can't hear and you don't know are there. And that's where the problems show up, is out in the hidden bulk of code and machines and systems and wiring and interconnections that make up Internet Protocol, or IP.
Well, let me just back up a little, David. What happened was that, the president said that he drew a line. You cross that line and there'll be consequences. And basically, when you draw a line, well, you know what happens. Either someone backs off or they're going to call your bluff. And in this case, what is attributed to Syrian Electronic Army is that they maybe,
Well, they've been around for quite a while.
I know.
Electronic
Army. But the thing is, I've never heard this done before by our government. This is the first time I've heard it. The other day, we released the information to the media saying, we are prepared to attack them on Thursday. We are identifying what the targets are. I feel like saying, why are we giving out that information? So I could see where the Syrian Electronic Army is throwing.
Yeah, I didn't hear that.
Yeah,
I did not.
Thursday.
Hear that.
They're talking about Thursday, okay? And they're going to say it will last for 72 hours. What kind of war is that? You don't fight a war that way. You're going to fight a war, you fight or get out of it. Don't even be involved in it. Okay, I mean the whole thing is ridiculous to announce that, you know, and they say we're not going after the infrastructure.
Well, no, I remember George Bush saying, Saddam Hussein and his two sons must surrender themselves and leave Iraq by next week, or we invade.
But yeah, but
do
he,
you
but,
remember that?
Yes, but he didn't say what day he was going to do it. This time,
well, yeah, he did.
No. He's this one
the
is.
The whole world knew that we were going to attack on Valentine's Day, February 13th, 2003.
Wait. Valentine's Day is not February 13th, okay?
Well, whatever it was, it was February something.
You know, David, you're going to be trouble. You're going to get in trouble with your wife if you're going to remember Valentine's Day is on February 13th.
Right. Whatever. We were actually in London.
Now,
that's why I know.
Oh,
this.
Okay.
We
now, let me ask you this, okay? They picked 10 websites, and the websites was Twitter, New York Times, Huffington Post, among others, and they took high profiles. Now, what happened really was that it wasn't really like anything of...